Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. More with John Canzano, the Bald-Faced Truth, on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
I put up a poll, a BFT poll on Twitter last week, and I asked you about politics. Like, how much politics do you want on your sports radio show or in your sports world? And 86% of you said that you either were indifferent to it or didn't want it there. Only 14% of you said that you wanted the politics to be part of your sports world. And I think in part because there's this exhaustion with politics right now, we're all sick of it. We're all sick about hearing about the White House. And granted, I haven't spent a minute in the White House, so I'm just speaking like I don't know what I'm talking about. But we're all sick of the White House. We're all sick of what's going on. A lot of us don't like what we see coming out of there. And so I think there's a lot of exhaustion when it comes to President Trump, policies, debate, Russia. We're just sick of it. And it's why you want to escape from it. You want to come on a sports radio show and you want to hear about your Ducks. You want to hear about your Beavers. You want to hear about the Blazers. You want to hear about Derek Jeter and A-Rod not liking each other. You want to hear about the conference finals that we all know are headed to being the Warriors and the Cavaliers. And guess what? Everybody talks about this like it's a bad thing. The Warriors and the Cavs might play, are going to play, in the finals. This is a terrific thing for us. This is a terrific thing for those teams. This is a terrific thing for the NBA. The Warriors and Cavs, it's not the same as having two. These are the best two teams. That's not the problem with the NBA. It's not that we're not going to get the best two teams. The problem is the charade that we have to go through to get the best two teams. It's too long. It's drawn out. The series are too long. Too many teams are making the playoffs. And at the end of it, we're exhausted with the basketball until everybody takes a break. This is the point of the playoffs where everybody kind of goes, all right, I need a break. LeBron gets a week off. You should get a week off from the playoffs. But I asked you about politics, and you said no politics. So I'm going to try to adhere to that. We're not going to talk a lot about politics on this show until you tell me you want to hear more about politics. But I also will say this. I think there's exhaustion that comes in topics within sports, too. Remember how tired you got of Tim Tebow? RG3. Remember how ridiculous Derek Jeter's retirement got? How about Deflategate? You get exhausted with Deflategate and Tom Brady talking about the PSI of footballs? I did. Marshawn Lynch, is he coming back or not? Got tired of that. Is there an exhaustion factor with Willie Taggart that is approaching? Is there an exhaustion point that we will get to with Taggart that we all kind of go, oh, you know what? We've just talked about Taggart being too much without him coaching a game. I don't know if that point will come, but it's not yet. Because I still want to talk about Willie Taggart, and I want you to weigh in and tell me, what do you think Willie Taggart needs to do in year one, and how will year one sort of shape, you know, the future of Oregon football? Like, there's some people who believe that it's done for Oregon, that the Ducks will never win on the level that they won on with Chip Kelly, and maybe even Mark Helfrich. They won some with Helfrich. There are others who say, no, Oregon's brand and the university's facilities and the connection with Nike give it some inherent advantages. Oregon will always be a top half of the conference team if it has the right leadership. I think that this summer is the most interesting time that we have ever had with Oregon football. And I texted Willie Taggart this yesterday. I said to him, I've covered four coaches at Oregon. You're the fourth. Mike Bellotti was kind of the CEO type. Chip Kelly, he took the program somewhere no one could dream. And there wasn't all this, when Chip Kelly took over the program, there wasn't all this angst. There wasn't all this rubbernecking going on that's going on right now. when Chip Kelly took over, people were kind of like, what's going to happen? But then all of a sudden, it just started happening. And it was like beyond your wildest dreams if you're a Duck fan. Then came Helfrich, who said, I just wanted to keep it the same. Except he didn't. Got a little stale, got a little soft, got a little, got off the rails, really. Lost its personality, lost its identity, lost its edge. Stopped being different. Now comes Taggart. And everybody this spring and this summer has been and will be watching to see what Taggart does, says, tweets, until he coaches a game. And then we're going to be watching those games saying, can the guy coach? Is this just the first year? Will he be better next year? Can he build a winner? There's so much rubbernecking going on. There's never been more interest in a coach at Oregon. And a guy at the center of that is joining us now. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian and Oregon Live has been around the football program, has the view from up close. Andrew, thanks for making time.
Of course, John. Thank you.
Do you sense that swell of interest in Oregon? And is it all Taggart-related or is it angst-related? What do you think it's about?
I think it's a lot of factors, but of course, it's going to be Willie Taggart related. I mean, the interest, just from a pure metrics standpoint, I mean, not to open up the kimono too much, but it's like, you know, when we write Duck stories, you can gauge the level of engagement or readers who are looking at things or how much, you know, and it's like Duck stories, they are some of the most read, most shared stories of all of the Oregonian. So, I mean, and that's something that while true, even a couple of years ago, I feel like there's an extra level to it. Certainly in spring. Spring was pretty amazing to see how many fans were tweeting or emailing, like, what's it look like? Tell me this, tell me that. That wasn't around the previous three springs that I've been around. So I was pretty surprised, even for a new coaching staff, knowing there would be probably a spike in interest, that there seems to be even a lot more so this time around.
It's, to me, I keep calling it rubbernecking because I think even non-Ducks fans are curious, like, what's Oregon going to be? Because Oregon led the way in football. And it brings me to my next point. Rob Mullins came on the show and he talked about, you know, connecting with Portland. And we're watching, you know, viewership of games is declining. Those rights fees have got to follow when they renegotiate those contracts years from now. And he's really making a pitch to Portland and a pitch to the fan in Portland that I think is different than what he's done in the past. How much does Willie's first year figure into that?
I think it'll figure in a decent amount, but there's also a grace period with any new coaching transition. So I don't think it's all dependent on year one. I think year two is where a huge emphasis has to be placed on results. That might've seemed crazy a decade ago in college football. But the timeline has gotten sped up so much. You look at the number of coaches who've reached national title games in year two, there's a ton of them. And so I think that, yeah, there is an onus on Taggart to win quickly. You know, we're going to give you some time, of course, with that defense. It's going to take some time, but results have to be, have to come in pretty quickly. And look, obviously Helfrich had results and then when he didn't, he was gone. So, I mean, there's obviously a natural clock, with that kind of previous leadership, the time they got, I think there has to be certain sort of expectation for Taggart too. You know, let's get some real results, if not year one, definitely by year two.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian and Oregon Live joining us. It felt new to me, the pitch from Mullins. Is that a new thing that you're seeing? Because I felt like 5 years ago, I almost wanted to say they didn't care that much about the ticket holder. They were focused on, hey, if you don't buy tickets, somebody else is going to buy them. But you know, Mullins coming on and saying, even in the Mariota year, Heisman Trophy, get to the title game, they saw a softening of ticket sales. That surprised me.
I do think that, and I wasn't covering the team in Chip Kelly those 4 years, but it did seem like the demand was outrageous during that time. It was like, you know, Timbers-level demand, where if someone left their seat, someone would take it. And, yeah, you did see demand fall. I think that some of that has to do with second screen experience. It's just easier, late kickoffs. I mean, there's a number of factors. I mean, there's one thing that all makes the fans want to stay home maybe a little more. But I do think that appeal to fans is something new. I mean, you saw last year they took out full-page ads in the local newspaper in Eugene, you know, saying, be the atmosphere. They created a website for that, to tell fans, basically, to market to them why they should go to games. Before, it was pretty clear why they should go to games. You know, it's a good team, a good product, a fun product. You know, that something has changed, and I think they recognize that even going back a year ago, they needed to make a really overt pitch to fans. And so I'm not really surprised that Mullins would say that, just because I think it's what almost every AD has to say these days. You know, you have to provide fans a reason, whether that is the tailgate experience, you know, the pregame walk with the Ducks. You know, this year they brought the Ducks to Portland for that same reason, a way to connect with people, to say, hey, we're not just going to have you come to us. We're going to come to you. I think that's smart. You saw Oregon State do it in recent years with the, you know, the scrimmages at Hillsboro and the baseball games at Hillsboro. I think it was smart of Oregon to kind of come out of its bubble a little bit and say, yeah, we'll come to you too.
Yeah, because Oregon State was doing it first and in kind of recognizing, hey, we need Portland. Now you see Mullins. I mean, he came on, he said, Portland was extremely, extremely important to us. And I was like, hey, this is kind of a new thing. We're being wooed here a little bit. And I kind of like it. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian is with us. You know, Taggart, he's got all this flash to him. And he's on Twitter. He's on social media like nobody else. He's everywhere. Do you think that equates to wins in year one? Or is this just kind of Willie's energy? And we'll wait and see how that sort of manifests itself in wins and losses.
I don't know if it equates to wins in year one, but I do know that it will equate to energy and goodwill among fans. He clearly is engaged. He clearly, you know, as much as the athletic department for years has trumpeted themselves as a national brand, he has really made it clear that he, like Mullen said the other day on the radio, he wants to target Oregon. You know, that's why they, again, went to Portland for the scrimmage. He's trying to connect with local coaches all the time. I think it was really smart for him to not only connect with people on Twitter, you know, wherever they are, but also to invest in Oregon, invest his time in going around Oregon. So all of that together, taken together, the social media, the in-person stuff, if that doesn't deliver wins, I think it'll deliver goodwill from fans who say, hey, maybe the wins aren't there yet, but we think he's doing something right because we can see it. You know, he's being you can just see what he's doing, his activity, whether it's out in the community or on social media. I think that just kind of buys a connection with fans that will stave off the criticism, even if you aren't winning.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, Oregon Live with us. We had a lady call it in earlier who said that exact thing. She said she was going to cancel her season tickets, and then they hired Willie. She got excited, and then she said, I'm going to give it a year and wait and see. She said 6 wins in a bowl game or what would give her that kind of traction where she might renew again. Do you think she's in the minority there, or is that about what you think it takes to keep enthusiasm?
No, I think that she's in the majority probably of people who that's the baseline. I think that's my baseline for this coming year. You know, they have not a ton of talent on defense, but they have a lot of talent in some really key places, quarterback, you know, offensive line. Looks like the defensive line, the secondary looks like it's playing better. I really do think they have the talent to get to a bowl. You know, while the last year's record was the worst since 1991, the cupboards weren't completely bare. So I think that whether that takes to get from 4 wins to 6, maybe that's a little just extra buy-in from the player, a little more effort, a little bit cleaner play. I think they can get there, definitely. And the Pac-12 is going to be tough again. The top of the Pac-12 is going to be very difficult. USC is ascendant. Washington is going to be holding on for that Pac-12 title again. Stanford, always good. But I think that there's kind of a soft middle where Oregon could sneak in and definitely make above the Vegas Bowl even.
I thought this was an interesting statement that Mullins made, and I'll just quote him on it. He said that it was, I asked him, where does Oregon fit in the bigger picture? And, you know, he says, look, we're not the Big Ten. We're not the SEC. As long as we know who we are and as long as we know what we stand for, we're going to be okay. I think that was a little bit of a shift from we can compete with Michigan and Ohio State. We can compete with the SEC. Where do you think that derives from?
It's a good question. Oregon for so many years since they've been embraced the marketing angle since 1999. They brought out the new uniforms and kind of spearheaded that trend nationally. I think that they're who they are, how they self-identify is we are the people not afraid to change. While you embrace tradition, our tradition is constant change. It's right now with Oregon football kind of in this awkward period where you're not quite sure what it is, it's really important to find that identity. And I think that's why you're seeing so many people cling to Taggart. You know, he knows what he's about, and maybe he's the identity that people are going to point to and say, okay, he is Oregon football. Even though Oregon football is going through this awkward stage, clearly he knows what he's about. I think the athletic department, they are trying to do the exact same thing for themselves. You can compete with the Ohio State. I don't think they're saying they can't compete with them in terms of on the field, but those places have 100 years of tradition that Oregon certainly doesn't. That's not a bad thing. Oregon can work its way around that with slick marketing, and they have before. But I think you really need to make an appeal to fans in this new era with so many new faces that here's what we are about. And it sounds like Mullins has that idea of what they are all about.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, I really appreciate your time. Before I cut you loose, the men's basketball gets to a Final Four. They have success in women's basketball. The softball team's killing it. Track and field is great. The golf programs are awesome. These peripheral things, as much as we like to talk about them, they get lost. Is there any way Oregon can monetize those things? Or at the end of this, does it always come down to football?
I think it always comes down to football. I really do. I mean, Oregon's been good at the peripheral sports, with the exception of kind of tennis, which has had a really nice run this year for years. I mean, softball won 4 straight Pac-12 championships entering this year. Track, of course, is very, very good. I mean, golf was really good even 5-6 years ago. I think that football gets people in the door to realize those things are happening. You kind of have to hook people in the fall, and then basketball carries you through winter, and then spring comes, and you kind of say, "Hey, look what else we have." I think that does get overlooked, and track. If this weren't track town, I think track would get overlooked too. Oregon's been very good at the non-revenue sports, but in terms of larger interest, the revenue sports are going to get noticed in Eugene and Portland. The non-revenue, I should say, the golf and the track and field. Everything else has to be national. Football's success or failures are national. Basketball's success or failures are national.
I see the lack of interest in the Trailblazers in the metrics. I see the same thing you see with the Oregon Ducks. How much of that is Taggart-driven? How much of it is the Oregon Ducks? It's just a sexier thing to talk about because they've been in a couple national title games.
Probably the latter. I think that there was a huge amount of interest, even more so than Blazers, it seemed like, over the last, ever since I started, so 4 seasons ago. I think that it's not just strictly Taggart-related, but I think that spike of interest, probably over-excitement and also some anxiety, again, where is this season headed, where is this program headed, that is clearly on Taggart and the new staff, how they're going to rectify it or what they're going to do. But I think that the pro sports, obviously you would expect them to have a lion's share of the attention in the state because it's the pro sports, but really Ducks, it's amazing how many people tune in to see what they're up to.
Greif, thank you. You're the best.
Thank you, John.
Appreciate it. Good stuff from Andrew Greif talking about Willie Taggart. Do you agree with it? Do they have the talent to get to a bowl game? Did Mark Helfrich have that bad a year? Because my problem with Helfrich was I looked around and I said too many recruiting misses, too many times where he either didn't develop a player or didn't recruit the right guy. And let's just face it, in the wake of Marcus Mariota, it was a sin that they did not have a quarterback in the waiting. Mariota gave them the gift of coming back for that extra year, and they still didn't have anybody ready. It was like they thought they were losing him, and any coaching staff worth a damn would have got another quarterback ready and said, "Hey, you can come to Oregon, you can be a Heisman Trophy candidate." And Mariota said, "Oh, Grasso and I are coming back." Well, great. That bought you a whole year. Develop a guy. Recruit a guy. Find the next Marcus Mariota. And they didn't. They went to a fifth-year graduate transfer named Vernon Adams. And everybody was drunk in love with Vernon Adams. And I was like, problem. I don't care how many games they win. A little bit of a problem here. Fact that you weren't prepared. And everybody said, it's just 1 year. Next year came. Now 2 years removed from Mariota. Graduate transfer named Dakota Prukop comes in. And by the way, the guy that Helfrich eventually stumbled onto, Justin Herbert, he was not highly recruited by Helfrich, was almost a 11th hour addition, kind of flew under the radar. Yes, I know he has injuries, but my point is they weren't prepared. It was all just like, hey, look what we found. And that was a problem to me. So I don't know, like Royce Freeman coming back, that's great. I don't know how much talent they have. I really don't. And how much of a grace period there will be? I think there will be some, but it depends.
Like, what are we talking about? Like, what does quote unquote grace period mean? Does it mean 2 and 10? Because I don't think you get much grace period with 2 and 10. Is it if he wins 4 or 5, you go, hey, give him a chance in year 2? I think that's more reasonable. But I do expect him to win 6. And I frankly, I hear a lot of people talking 8 or 9, and I'm like, let's slow that roll a little bit. I think it's too much to put on Taggart. And my reason for saying so is not rooted in the fact that he's new. It's rooted in the fact that I didn't see a lot of talent on that field. You tell me, what are the expectations for you for next season? I'm going to say 6 wins. Tweet it to me at John Canzano BFT. Coming up, Punch It Audio, the best sound from all around.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Every day on this show at 2:30, Kiki reads the news. And my favorite part, though, comes around 12:45, 12:50, 1 o'clock, when Kiki starts to say, here's some stories that I am considering today. And I kind of half listen. I'm always doing something else, and I kind of just humor. I look up at her, but sometimes I'm not really paying attention. Except for today.
Yeah, I got your attention.
It's a terrible story. It's a terrible story coming out of Florida, where a 65-year-old man is on trial for murder. He is on trial for murdering his girlfriend. He's claiming that she accidentally choked to death while performing on him.
Yes.
Is that the best way to put it?
I think that's the best way to put it, yes. I thought that I was misreading the article, but that, in fact, is true.
She did die of asphyxiation.
She did. Which is not funny.
The defense here, that's not funny at all.
No, it's not.
And the defense here is that he's so endowed that she choked to death.
That's his defense. That's his defense, and he's asking to present the jury
evidence
to exonerate him from his murder charge.
I shouldn't laugh.
No, but it's
ridiculous. What'd you think when you first saw the story?
I thought I was reading The Onion, is what I thought, but then it's on multiple sources, so it's true. Florida. I'm telling you, Florida just has a hard time in general.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
It kind of has a Friday feel around here today on Thursday, doesn't it? I kind of feel like
long.
My inner 12-year-old self is absolutely dying inside, but I'm trying to keep it together here.
All week long. the best part of the story is the guy's name is Richard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what did you say it was going to be?
It's going to be a hung jury. Really has turned into the 12-year-old actor.
It is.
I think it's a bit terrible. Like, then you got to go right to the comments section, right? When I saw the story, I went right to the comments section, and I thought, so did everyone else. Well, that won't be part of Kiki Reads the News at 2:30, but you can tune back in at 2:30 and find out what will be part of this, and I can't wait for Eugene on Monday. And those of you who haven't heard, this show will begin syndication on Monday. And affiliate number one of the BFT radio network is the Eugene, Fox Sports Eugene, 95.7 FM or 1050 AM. If you're listening on the app in Eugene, you no longer have to do that. You can check us out right there in Eugene on 95.7 and 1050 AM. I want to thank Eugene for being affiliate number one in the radio network. Soon to be Bend, Klamath Falls, Medford. Where else do we need to go? If you are somebody out there who listens on the app and you want the show in your market, give us a shout out. That's how we ended up in Eugene. All right, let's play Punch It.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Taking the best sound from all around, let's start with Blue Jays infielder, former Oregon State Beaver Darwin Barney. He joined Justin and Chop, or the show that I like to call those guys, and he talked about the emotions of seeing his former club, the Chicago Cubs, win a World Series without him. Punch it.
From the day I was drafted, the goal was to win a World Series in Chicago. And, I spent seven years, with that as my goal. And, I was really happy for those guys. I was happy for the guys that I played with there that went through the grind, went through the struggle with us. And, on the other end, a part of me was rooting against them.
Darwin Barney won a Gold Glove Award. Darwin Barney has had a nice career, played for a long time in the big leagues, Southridge High School kid in Beaverton. All he did was win, right? Won a state championship in 2002 with the Skyhawks, went to Oregon State, won back-to-back championships. So, yes, when he was drafted by the Cubs in 2007, everybody thought, oh, man, it's just a matter of time. And it was a matter of time. In 2010, he gets called up to the big leagues. Then he goes to the Dodgers, Blue Jays, and then he gets to watch as the Cubs win it. I still think it would have been better had the Cubs lost it. Cubs fans, half the joy of being a Cubs fan was the misery.
Objection.
Celtics one win away from the conference finals, also known as one win away from the series that ends their season. Isaiah Thomas talks about Boston's execution last night. Punch it.
And we did a hell of a job tonight, from the first guy to the last guy. Coach made great adjustments, and we took what was off the whiteboard and put it in on the court, and we just got to do that on Friday.
By the way, Isaiah Thomas has been fined $25,000 for inappropriate language towards a fan. Apparently, he was yelling at a Wizards fan last Thursday, Game 3. They waited until Game 5 to make the announcement. But he made a profane remark at a fan at the Verizon Center. And he basically said, "I will bleep you up, and you know that," to a fan. And that was it. Boston is a good little story. Isaiah Thomas, he got us through the early rounds of the playoffs. He was inspiring. He was fun to watch. He 53 points in a game. The Celtics have been exciting on this Eastern Conference playoff run that nothing else is really surprising or exciting about it. But they're no threat to beat the Cavs, who are sitting around waiting. And that's what sucks about the playoffs in the NBA. We know where it ends. But the end of it, don't confuse that for not liking the Warriors-Cavs matchup, because everybody's kind of bashing on that. And I'm like, wait a minute, that is the matchup we want to see. I want to see a rematch of those teams. Civil War baseball starts today. Oregon coach George Horton talking about the opportunity to play the best in the nation. That's interesting. Punch it.
What a great opportunity to play the number one team in the nation. And there's going to be a lot of people here, some in orange, some in green. It's an exciting series, regardless of if they're the best team in the country. Now that they're the best team in the country, it's even more exciting from our standpoint.
I was walking around back there in their cleats. Thank you for that. It's like Wilford Brimley in The Natural. Red! Call Hobbs in here. That's what George Horton needs, too, because, look, Oregon's been a little up and down as a program, but the whole point was, when Oregon State was winning championships with Darwin Barney and others, Oregon was trying to start rekindle this baseball thing, and they hired Horton, who had been to a College World Series, and they haven't got back there. It's got to sting a little bit for Oregon to look over at Oregon State and see Pat Casey continuing to do it. And Casey, meanwhile, approaching win number 1,000. Derek Jeter and A-Rod did a joint interview with CNBC yesterday. This got interesting. Punch it.
Let's talk with Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez. Of course, Derek Jeter, 20 seasons with the Yankee, 5 times World Series champion. Alex Rodriguez, 12 or 13 seasons. We were trying to figure out.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.